When God speaks to us, he tells us who we are more than he tells us what to do. And most men are trying to hear from God, what should I do? What should my career be? Who should I marry? When a man tells you who you are, it ushers you into manhood. And that's what that book is about. And specifically, once you are a man, it's the five things that separate men from boys.
Welcome to the next episode of What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest is Brian Tome. Brian is the founding and senior pastor of Crossroads Church in Cincinnati, the 2017 fastest growing church in America. Brian has authored four books, including his bestseller, The Five Marks of a Man. He also hosts the Aggressive Life podcast. As an entrepreneur, Brian has opened several other nonprofits and started Man Camp, a primitive weekend camping experience that has helped tens of thousands of men reclaim the code of manhood. An avid adventure motorcyclist, Brian rides tens of thousands of miles and camps more than 30 nights a year. Brian has also released an adventure ride TV show called Phantom Lake, available on Amazon Prime. He is married with three children and lives in Cincinnati, Ohio. Brian provides incredible insight through this podcast on marriage and parenting. He talks about what should define a man, which I took a lot from. Also, we talk about how tough this COVID-19 time can be on your individual psyche that even a preacher, who most would say has it all figured out, still struggles during. A recent review has come in from MillerKing28, and they say, "Very entertaining podcast. Love the questions E. Wood generates week in and week out with his guests. You can tell these things aren't just thrown together, but quality time is spent on them. Look forward for more." I appreciate that, Miller King. I do put a lot of time into these, and I appreciate you reaching out and leaving us a review. As always, if you enjoy this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, please email whatsnexteric@gmail.com or hit me up on Instagram or Twitter at ewood70. Enjoy. This episode has been brought to you by Jordan Yoakum at Tom James Company. Jordan is my clothing guy, and I get everything from him, from custom suits and dress clothes to casual wear. Let Jordan do the shopping for you to save you precious time that could be focused on your family, career, or hobbies. Jordan can work virtually with anyone in the world, and if he cannot personally get your measurements himself, he will have someone come get them for him. If you have put on the quarantine 15 like many have and your clothes aren't fitting properly anymore, he can also make adjustments to the clothing you already have. There's a certain confidence that comes with having clothes that fit perfect, and let Jordan give you that confidence. You can contact him by email at jordan.yoakum@tomjames.com or visit his website louisvillecustomclothing.com. Contact info will be in the show notes.
Hey, Brian, welcome to the show.
Eric, it's an honor to be with you.
Yeah, man, we knocked out your podcast, The Aggressive Life, maybe about a month or so ago, and it's exciting to flip the tables, get you on What Next, What's Next with Eric Wood. And why don't you start off by telling the listeners about where you grew up, and I understand you're a pretty good athlete yourself.
Well, Eric, I was born at a very early age, and after I was born, I grew up in Pittsburgh. And, Pittsburgh, man, it was a hotbed for football in the world, I think, specifically Western Pennsylvania back in the 70s. I graduated in 83. But, you know, the whole history of that area, I mean, you start talking about the quarterbacks that came out of there. We're talking about
Jim Kelly, Dan Marino,
Joe Namath, Joe Montana. Kelly, Marino, I mean, on and on and on. In fact, I went to a football camp in high school, and Dan Marino was there playing for Pitt, and he was, you know, on his side doing his thing. And the reason why it was such a hotbed, Eric, is that was when Pittsburgh was a steel town, and that was the way you had hope to get out of the steel mills. And so Western Pennsylvania football was just kind of renowned as being the place. If you look at people who are in the Hall of Fame coming out of there, it's really crazy. So I unfortunately never made it to the Hall of Fame. I never made it to the pros. I never even made it to college ball. I didn't. So I can't say I was a pretty good athlete, though. I certainly got my varsity letter. They're playing linebacker and center, and it was a good form of time for me.
Yeah, but centers always get along, and that's probably where we made our initial connection, just both of us being a center. I get to catch up with a lot of those guys. Jim Kelly's golf tournament every year in Buffalo is this huge fundraiser, and a lot of the guys, especially since Jim's been sick, a lot of the guys come back for that. So it's been awesome getting to meet a lot of those Western PA quarterbacks, and it's fascinating to me that they all came out of that same area. I also had a offensive line coach named Joe D'Alessandris in the NFL when I was with the Bills. He was an Aliquippa guy. He's the O-line coach for the Ravens now, lead the league in rushing last year. We were first in the AFC when he was with us. Probably not a coincidence there, but he is so good at getting guys to work hard and band together. And he always talks about the way he says it is the steel mills and not steel the steel mills.
Steel mills.
Yeah. And so he would always talk about that, and I always found it funny. One thing I'll never forget, he would always talk to the guys that were dipping in the room, and he would say, you never bummed a dip off a guy at a steel mill, because a lot of times they would have a shot of whiskey in there, and you didn't know what you were getting. And he's like, I did it once, I puked, but I digressed pretty good there. But at what point did you know that you wanted to get into ministry?
Oh, gosh, Eric, I was rebellious towards my parents, so – my parents had just kind of brainwashed me since I was a little kid. You're going to go to college. You're going to go to college. Go to college. And I just had a lot of issues. They were relatively minor, but I'm adopted. And there's a lot of things that adopted kids have in common. One of them is we have a fear of rejection because, and I don't want to be into all the psychobabble. Everyone can make their own decisions for themselves. But the basic understanding is that the person who we knew first in the womb, who we were connected with, gave us away. And that kind of makes a primal wound, if you will. And I look at my parents were like nothing like me, nothing. They didn't look like me, they didn't have humor like me, they didn't have any, they're wonderful people, they are wonderful people. I'm very, very thankful for my parents. But I had a level of rebellion in me. So they were both valedictorian in college, and they just had this thing for me, go to college. And I just rebelled against it. I didn't want to go to college. And I was a really poor student. And then I felt God call me into ministry when I was going into my senior year in high school. And I knew that along with that, it meant that I needed to go to college for this program I was going into. So I went to college dragging and kicking my heels. And it took me 7 years to get a four-year degree. But here I am.
You're like Tommy Boy. It takes a long time. A lot of people go to college for 7 years. Yeah, they're called doctors. But you founded Crossroads Church in 1996. In 2017, it was the fastest growing church in the country. It's in my hometown. A lot of my buddies that I grew up with that were all Catholic, most of them that go to church now go to Crossroads. And the journey that it's been on has just been tremendous. Tell me what it was like at the start of that, though, because there's a lot of guys that tune into this podcast that are in initial stage of business or whatever it may be in their career. And I'm assuming what you see now is not what it was like in 1996.
Dude, there is no way. If someone says to me, hey, did you see Crossroads becoming what it is? I don't want to start listing all of our numbers and accomplishments, but we got a number of them. And if I always say, absolutely not. There is no way. There's no way. It is so obviously way beyond my ability or anybody's ability who was in the early days of Crossroads. It's way, way beyond. We just wanted to have an environment to talk about God in a language people could understand for those who had given up on the idea of church but hadn't given up on the idea of God. And, you know, we kept it simple and trying to strip away all the religiosity we can. And, man, people have been reached, and it's been just a lot of fun. I would also say too, Eric, along with that, talk about the football thing. I don't make this connection with a lot of people because a lot of people don't get it. But when I started walking with Christ and really getting turned on to what a life with him would look like, I started to really miss my football days. My football team in high school, it was awful. I mean, we were just awful. I think the most games we ever won was 4 or something like that. But man, the camaraderie in the locker room, the coach Eli Visnick giving a rah-rah thing before we go out in the field. I remember one time he pulls out the program that had all of the all of the players, you know, numbers and stuff. He said, you know, when I look at this, when I look at this program, I see all kind of people who look good on paper. But it's all it is. It's a static paper. You know what I want to know, though? I want to know, where's the spark? He pulls out this lighter. He starts flicking it, going around the whole room. I want to know where the spark is, because we need a spark in this room. We need a spark in this room so we can start a fire. And he lights the whole program on fire. His smoke is going up. He puts it down. Oh, I want to know, are we going to? He just fires us up totally. And I love the camaraderie. I love the purpose. I loved everything. And I thought, why in the world are my most enthusiastic team memories from a high school football team? I'm in the church. I'm in the institution that has changed the course of the world. Orphanages, hospitals, soup kitchens, all of them, adoption agencies, all of them, every single one of them initially founded by the body of Christ, by the team of Jesus who went out to affect the world and infect the world positively. And I just looked around the churches I was a part of, and I said, I don't, where's the fire? Where's the energy? It's what, how sad is it that I should want to go back to high school to have a team environment when I'm in something that historically has changed the world and people have laid their lives down. I mean, literally shed blood for, I mean, literally died over, you know, not took a suicide block on a blast. I mean, literally died over. Something's really gone wrong in our American form of Christianity, that's the way it is. And something has gone wrong. That's why our Christian faith in America, we're so anemic. If you compare it to places like China, where there's legitimate bloodshed for your faith, the church is thriving.
Yeah, so many good points in there. When you talked initially about Crossroads being so much more than you ever imagined it could be, it reminds me of the verse that God will do immeasurably more with you if you'll put your trust in him and that you can ever imagine. Bob Russell, who founded Southeast, was on our podcast, and that's what he talked about. In the same vision of Southeast, did he envision at 200 members that it would be 25,000 plus by the time he left 20 years later? No.
Right.
But he understood that God can do immeasurably
more. Ever more abundantly is what it says there in the scriptures.
Yeah.
And we exactly. Think of God as this, I do anyway, because I am adopted. And so I have an Oliver Twist mentality, Eric, where I think that God's holding out on me or God's being cheap on me. And I can think that, oh, God isn't going to use little old me. He doesn't want to do something through me. And my orphan mentality constantly lessens myself in my own eyes, where God's mentality is not that at all. He does want to abundantly bless us. He does want to abundantly use us.
Yeah, and that's something I've struggled with a little bit since my career ended abruptly. You know, initially when it happened, I said, well, there's my big moment. There's my testimony. You know, I'll tell everybody about how, you know, I had my foundation in my faith, and I'll use this to get on speaking circuits, and I'm going to be a broadcaster and all this. And I've got into broadcasting. Am I doing Monday Night Football? No, but that's fine. I'm really enjoying the gigs I have now. But there's a lot of times where someone say, man, you should write a book about all the lessons you've learned playing football. Man, you should give this talk. And I'll say, who am I? Mm-hmm. You know, who am I to do that? There's so many guys I played with, even just on the teams I played on, that are better speakers or more equipped in my mind. And there's times where I definitely, you know, I was not an orphan. I was not adopted. But that mentality, you say, like, who am I to do that? Is something I've struggled with. And I say, write a book. You've written many books. One of the books you've written, Five Marks of a Man, I would say, and I don't want to offend John Gordon, who's my favorite author, who came on the podcast not long ago, but Five Marks of a Man is probably the book that I've gifted the most. Gifting books is one of my favorite things to gift. And Five Marks of a Man, I've probably gifted to more people than any other book. And I just love it. I'm in men's groups at church, and I think it speaks to a lot of people in my generation. And I love at the beginning of the book, and you, to paraphrase, hey, if you're offended by a preacher that enjoys bourbon, rides motorcycles, will use tobacco, then maybe this book isn't for you, but I am going to teach you lessons of being a man. What are some of your top takeaways that you want people to get from that book?
The book really came out of me, my personal story and journey. I kept trying to prove that I was a man in high school, whether it was you know, excessive alcohol use or smashing mailboxes with a baseball bat or lying about things I did with girls I didn't do to appear like I was, you know, more sexually active than I was. And I came to realize what I was trying to do is I was prove that I was a man, because a man needs to know that he's a man. But the problem is the way you know you're a man is a man tells you you're a man. Jesus hears from his heavenly Father, "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." In fact, Eric, I don't know if you ever realized this or not, there's only two times where Jesus is given specific instruction from God. I just gave you one. Do you know what the other one is?
Does he give an instruction of the greatest commandment?
No. The only other time, now God may have spoken to Jesus many, 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 many times, word for word. We don't know, but we only know there's two that are recorded in the book of Matthew, Mark, and Luke and John. The second one is at his transfiguration, where he's transfigured into a heavenly looking being. And God says the exact same thing in front of the disciples. "This is my son in whom I'm well pleased." So the two things, the only two things we have recorded that Jesus ever hears from God, or that he doesn't hear from God, or at least not recorded who his disciples should be. He doesn't hear where he should go preach next. He doesn't hear what his sermon illustration should be. He doesn't hear how many clothes he should be carrying with him. Those are two things. What that means is that when God speaks to us, he tells us who we are more than he tells us what to do. And most men are trying to hear from God, "What should I do? What should my career be? Who should I marry?" When a man tells you who you are, it ushers you into manhood. And that's what that book is about. And specifically, once you are a man, it's the five things that separate men from boys. There are 45-year-old boys and there are 15-year-old men. It's a matter of who you are. And so those five things are things like teamwork, vision, taking a minority position, being a protector, not a predator, and being a worker. And that's what the book is about.
Yeah, and it is so great. It is so practical, and I can't recommend it enough to people out there. You also started a deal called Man Camp, which I actually participated in. Tell the listeners a little bit about Man Camp.
Oh, man. Man Camp is probably my favorite ministry thing I've done over the last several years. I was on a motorcycle trip with a bunch of guys, and we were sitting around one morning at a campfire and right by a little creek and having our coffee. The night before, we'd had a few beers and stuff, and it was just a really good time. And we'd had some deep conversation. In the midst of that, the walls come down with guys. Guys start talking about their difficult marriages or their porn problem or how they're struggling at work or how they're financially up against the wall or how they're feeling just in a rut. Guys just start talking, and it happens all the time. And so that morning we said, man, what could we do to give guys this kind of opportunity to have these kind of conversations, but they don't have to buy a motorcycle or like motorcycle riding? And so Man Camp was born. It was born as a experience where you didn't know exactly what was going to happen. It was going to be primitive camping. You're going to be out pooping in the woods and throwing some teaching and some worship. And it just has grown since then. We've had, like, I don't know, 16,000 guys from around the country come through it.
Wow.
And we were going to be in Nashville this weekend. We were going to be in Nashville this fall, but with the COVID stuff, we had to cancel it. So we just find that, brother, guys are hurting, man. And I would just say it to guys on your podcast. If you're hurting, if you're beat down, welcome to the club. American culture is grinding the average guy to a nub. And if you've got ladies who are listening to this podcast, if your guy seems listless, if he seems like something isn't right, unfortunately, your husband's not the only one. This is a very common thing, because we're not wired to deal with the kind of civilization challenges that we have, especially when we're detached from great father figures that very few of us have. And that's what I found. Is that what you found at the camp, Eric?
I did. I mean, one of the biggest takeaways that I had from the entire weekend was you were forced to take your journal and go sit in the woods by yourself for an hour. I don't know when the last time I was completely disconnected from everyone, anything, all my thoughts. And it was only an hour. And it really hit me about how often I need to tap in to some alone time, get in nature, figure out times to put that in my schedule. And but there were so many things I loved about it. You know, we had great connection around the fire. And then the second night, I told you this story on your podcast, but I was staying in a tent with a Navy SEAL, and it turns to be terrible weather. It dropped from 55 degrees to 35 degrees, and it's freezing rain, and our tent gets swept away. And I said, man, it's going to be a long night. I guess we'll just hang out under the big tent. You know, we can have a few beers. We'll talk all night. And then we had a ride home in the morning. That's when I was comfortable having a couple beers. But he said, no, we are soaking wet. It's going to get potentially freezing. He goes, we're going to get hypothermia. We need to go home. I am not an expert in the medical SEAL set, or the Navy SEAL said to go home. So we took off. I was prepped to get as much crap as I thought I might get from everyone else. But I guess most of the people who tents got swept away left, but I do need to go back to man camp.
Yeah. What do you know? Navy SEALs actually want to survive, not suck it up. Yeah. So there is something to it. That was a crazy night. Yeah. We had a mass exodus that night. I tried not to be too judgmental.
Yeah. I told him, I said, well, we're going to have to come back and redeem ourselves or I'm going to have to come back and redeem myself. You're a Navy SEAL. You've proven your toughness. I still need to prove it. I had a bunch of equipment on. I was on a football field. That's not nearly life and death like Navy right. SEAL work is. But you mentioned the wives listening to the podcast. What advice would you give to men out there, just practically speaking? And some of it comes from your book, Five Marks of a Man, but just about being intentional with your wife, especially through this pandemic time when it can be so hard when restaurants are limited. It's just tough to find stuff to do.
Well, let's go back to man camp for a moment, because I think it ties into that, Eric, if you don't mind. The power of man camp is multifold. One of the things is, the main thing is, it forces us as men to do things that men don't do anymore, that every single man in all of history did that we don't do anymore. Like you just mentioned one, having your personal time alone with God for an hour. There, until the last 30 years or 20 years, there's never been a man in the history of the world that couldn't spend an hour of time without a media device in his hand. No longer. There's not a single man in all of America that could do that anymore, because all of us are on that all the time. That's one thing. Secondly, just camping, pooping in the woods. Our body was made to squat, not to sit in a seat. Every single man in the history of the world is camped. And we don't do that. We lose something. I believe we lose something with our masculinity. Singing. There's a singing in the tent. Every guy who's ever gone out to battle in the history of the world has sung songs to fire themselves up before they go into battle. We think, well, you know, real men don't sing. We are the most isolated group of men in world history. We don't have friends. We don't sit around campfires with each other. We don't work with people in the field. Everyone is on their own thing. We're in cubicles, walled off from people. We are incredibly isolated. So the ladies out there and the guys, just understand, when you have a guy who's not done what every other healthy man does in the history of the world, in every single corner of the globe, you can't expect to be on your game, and you can't expect to be able to foster a relationship that's healthy. I'm not saying, Eric, that you've got to be a camper in order to have a great husband. I'm not saying you've got to listen to or worship an hour a day. I'm not. All I'm saying, guys, is, and ladies, you recognize, men have been stolen from. Jesus says the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. There has been a strategy. There has been an enemy that's stolen something from us, and as a result of us not being who God wants us to be, we unfortunately don't serve people the way we can serve them. We don't serve our wives the way we can serve them, because we're just worn out. We're isolated. We're alone. We're frazzled. And we don't want another failure in our life. Even having a discussion with our wife that goes sideways can be intimidating. And so we don't instigate the discussions we need to. So what I would say to guys is, well, first of all, what I say to women, if you've got women listen, man, if you're a Christian woman, the one line you should never, ever, ever use is this: I need you to be the spiritual leader of our household. Mm. Never, ever, ever use that. Number one, because when you do that, he doesn't know what that means. He's going to feel beat up. He's going to feel like he doesn't measure up to your expectations, and he's going to retract even more. women want to be loved. Men want to be respected. In fact, that's even what the Bible says. Right. Husbands, love your wives, da-da-da-da-da. Wives, respect your husbands. And when he feels like he's not measuring up or you don't respect him in that, he's going to withdraw even more. The second thing I would say to women on that is, I say, what do you mean he's not the spiritual home? They're like, well, I mean, we go to church and stuff, but you know, like, he's not leading our family in Bible studies or anything like that. And I go, all right, back off a little bit, because I'm pretty good at Bible studies. I kind of do it for a living. Every single one I've done with my family has been a failure. So I haven't done one for decades. So if you think that he needs to lead Bible studies in order to be a spiritual leader, you're at the same time telling me that I'm not a spiritual leader of my family. And I think my family would tell you that I am a spiritual leader. There's just some things that I'm not doing. So I would tell her, hey, just try to give him a little bit of grace. What I would tell him is, man, just take some small steps, reach out and grab your wife's hand more often. Ask your wife just to pray with you. And I mean, I'm talking about a 5-second prayer. I'm not talking about an hour on your knees. Like before you leave for work in the morning, when you come home, do a 5-second deal. Just do things that show her that you're thinking of her.
And those are powerful words. And I truly appreciate all those. I've been married now for 8 years, and I love hearing a guy who's been married for 30 plus years pour into me, pour into others. That's phenomenal. Another aspect of my life, I have 2 young kids, 5 and 2. What's your top advice? Or, you know, we could go on for days about parenting advice, but you have 3 children that I'm, from my observation, seeing you with your son at band camp and hearing about you and your daughters, you have very healthy relationships with them, 1 grandchild. What is the top tips or success tips for cultivating healthy relationships with your children that grow into what young adults now?
Man, there's a lot, Eric. I think love and limits are 2 of them. I mean, you're constantly going, how am I loving this child? Being tender with them, encouraging them, all that stuff. And then how am I setting limits for them? Most parents are good at one or the other. They're great at just throwing out, or they're great at discipline. And you've got to be able to do both. And you got to be able to do that well. I think another thing I'd say, there's a bunch of them. We could write a book on this, but just ones I don't hear many people talk about. I think with your kids, Eric, you need to be first to market. You know, in business, the first one to market is the one that controls the conversation. So Wow. You need to be first to market with your kids on things like sex. Like, you need to be talking with them about sex before they have any interest or any clue at all. You need to be explaining them what happens with the penis when it gets hard. And you need to be explaining to your daughters, this is what your husband's going to do to you, and it's going to be great. And you save yourself for your husband. You tell your son, it's going to feel great. And he's going to go, ooh, gross. And you go, no, it sounds gross, but it's not. Trust me, it's going to be great. You just want to protect your heart. And here's what you want to be. I'm talking a bit maybe graphically for some of our listeners, but this is the kind of stuff you have to do for your kids. You need first market, because they're going to hear about all that stuff from somebody, and at least 50% of what they hear is going to be wrong. It's going to be a perverted view of sex. So you got to be first to market. And that's not the sex thing. That's the money thing, everything. We're here to raise our kids up. We're not here, Eric, to get our kids to college. We're not here to fulfill a fantasy of having a beautiful picture on the wall. We're here to raise our kids up, to enable them to be somebody they cannot be if it weren't for us.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk about being graphic. I talk to the freshmen at University of Louisville often with athletics. And one of the things I'll tell them is, you know, if you haven't already, save yourself for marriage. You know, it's something you'll never regret, blah, blah, blah. And they look at you like, wait, I got to college. Aren't you supposed to be promiscuous? And same deal, first to market. Like, I'm one of the first people talking to them. I'm older. I made it to the NFL. So that gives me a platform that they respect. And I love and I love doing that for them. And it kind of catches them off guard.
Yes.
And then one of the things that I'll literally never forget, I've told 50 people this at minimum, is the story about when your youngest daughter had a date come to pick her up, and you made him take you out for a burger because you said, look, I wouldn't let someone come drive my golf clubs around if I knew he wasn't a good driver. So why the heck would I, am I going to let a stranger take my prized possession, my baby girl, out on a date? And I don't even know if he's a good driver. And I told my wife, I said, our little girl is going to hate me, but I'm going to do that too.
Yeah, that was a significant discussion we had. And I would say to my daughter's people who would take him out the first time, that was a standard thing. We have a date with my daughter, you got to have a date with me. We got to go out. Or at least we got to talk. So, and I would ask two questions. One, I need your assurance that you're going to protect my daughter's reputation, because girls get bad reputations or lies get out about them, and it's just awful for them. And two, I need to understand your sexual intentions with my daughter. What are you planning to do sexually with her? Those are two very uncomfortable conversations, at least for them, not so much for me. And I've told that story so many times. And here's the end of the story, Eric. The last time I did that with that gentleman, when he was 16, she was 16. They just got married last weekend.
Wow. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you. So 5-6 years later, I was sitting across from a man at Frisch's Big Boy in Cincinnati. And that guy ended up being an amazing son-in-law for me. But again, as dads, would he be a great son-in-law right now had I not had that conversation with him? I don't know. Maybe their relationship would have gone sideways. Maybe I helped him toe the straight and narrow by that conversation. I don't know. I also know this, that I'm not talking about morality here, Eric. It's not, hey, you've got to not sleep with somebody for God to love you. It's, we have to spell out, when you have sex with somebody you're not married to, you're damaging your heart. When you have sex with someone you're not married to, you're using something for pleasure that's designed for pleasure and intimacy. And you're not one with that person spiritually, emotionally, so why should you be one with that person physically? And if you're looking for your long-term sex health, your long-term to having great sex for decades in the future, you don't want to be storing up a lot of baggage and a lot of memories right now. It's those kind of things that we've got to coach people on.
Man, that's phenomenal stuff, and I appreciate your boldness, and I appreciate your wisdom, because I had never heard that before with the taking you out for a test drive and having those conversations. And my daughter's 5. Hopefully, I got a long time before then.
Right.
But it's going to happen in our household. During this time of COVID-19, how have you encouraged your congregation and tried to build them up through this time?
Oh gosh, Eric, I don't have a great answer for this one right now, because the world is so divided, right? I have a friend who, it's a board member. She's doing an assignment over in Geneva, Switzerland, and how they've handled the COVID is totally different than how America's handled the COVID. And she said, I can't believe you guys are just swirling around, not knowing exactly how to handle this. And another board member said, well, the difference probably between you and us is, no matter what leader or politician makes a statement, 50% of everybody thinks it's wrong and thinks there's some kind of scandal behind it or some kind of, right, you know, weird deal. So in my church, I mean, I got half the people who think we're being too concerned and safety oriented, and half the church who thinks that we're falling into some conspiracy that the Democrats or then whatever. So it's been really, really difficult. So all I've tried to do with our church is to not leave any guesswork, to let people know exactly what we're going to do and why we're going to do it, to not have them waiting on a week by week basis. So we announced a month ago that we weren't going to have services for the rest of 2020. And I need to do that just so we could make some plans, you know, so we could say, now we're going to shift these resources over to this field of play permanently, not just waiting around to see if we're going to shift back into the old model of being in buildings every Saturday and Sunday night. So I'm trying to do that. I'm also trying to share with people my struggles and pains. I have for my life right now, the first time I've had, I think, low grade depression. I don't know if a psychologist would diagnose me with depression, but when you look in the National Institute of Health website, the signs of depression that many men have, like I'm tick, 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 like irritability, check. Anger, check. Sleeplessness, less sleep than normal, check. Disinterest in normal hobbies that turn you on, check. And so I've just shared, like, yeah, I'm dealing with some low-grade depression. And as I've shared that, people feel like, Oh, wow. You too? That's me too. You mean I can talk about that? I'm not an awful weak person. So I'm just trying to model for people how we should, you know, be vulnerable in this time. And I think that's been helpful.
Yeah, that's excellent. And for a guy with your platform to be able to share that and be able to be vulnerable like that, that's going to pour into so many lives. And it's this natural, I feel like so many guys, so many people I've spoke to have had a progression through the quarantine. It was like, initially it was kind of, hey, we actually get to spend more time together with our families. It's, hey, at 5 o'clock updates are coming on from the governor down here, Governor Beshear. It's beers with Beshear. Like, let's have fun with this. And then it turned into, okay, well, now I have all this time on my hands. I'm going to be ultra productive. I'm going to do projects at home. For me personally, it was podcasts, clothing, whatever it may be. Like, I'm going to go all in. I'm going to meet with a broadcast coach. And then it's like, why am I putting so much pressure? So it's been like this, and I'm with you. There's been so many mornings I had this deal. I was either waking up at 2:30 or 4:30 every day, and my mind would start racing, and I'd be up for the day. And I'm like, what is going on right now? Like, yes. You trick yourself and you feel like you got to put on this facade for everyone else that's looking to you for encouragement, yeah, or you feel like you can't be vulnerable. And I truly appreciate you sharing that with me and my listeners.
Well, and again, back to the line of thought of things that we're doing that men have not done before, being with your family 24/7, That's never happened before. It creates stresses. It does. Now, someone say, well, what do you mean? Hold on. When we were an agrarian culture, guys weren't going off to work. They were at home all the time. Yeah, but they were on a tractor out in the field all day. They weren't inside of a house. Look at their wife and I'm looking at them. And there's all kind of tensions that are popping up as a result of it. So if we're out of sorts, I think we just need to give ourselves some grace. And don't be too upset that we're upset. Don't be too upset that we're depressed. Don't be too upset that things just don't feel good for us right now, because they don't for a lot of us. But we've just got to do our best to be faithful on a day-by-day basis.
Absolutely. And you talked about being able to get some clarity around this fall. So you just said, hey, we're not going to meet together, but we're going to allocate those resources. You know, I've been playing this 2-month cliffhanger of what's going to happen with college football season and NFL. And look, I'm not playing anymore. I'm on the broadcast side. And there's people that are going to be in the trenches of all this, no pun intended, be playing offensive line, but they're going to, and I understand that it's not that, the severity of it's not dramatic, whether I'm in a booth or calling from home or what it looks like. I just want to know. And the longer that looms and the closer we get and all the plans that have been canceled because of what's coming that may not happen, it just plays mind games with you. And I know exactly what you're saying. Let's knock out a couple recurring questions. I want to be sensitive of your time. First off, what's your favorite book?
Duh. Favorite book, my gosh. Well, I guess I would have to say the Bible, or else I'd probably get fired. If I didn't say the Bible, I would say the most fascinating read I've ever had is Con Eagleton's series on Genghis Khan. It's historical fiction. It was fantastic. Con Eagleton, Genghis Khan, he's got a bunch, 5 of them. So that was just mind-numbingly good for me.
Awesome. I'll definitely check that out. A couple more. What's your favorite restaurant in Cincinnati?
The Precinct, which I go to too rarely because it costs too much money.
Yeah, I just had Jeff Ruby on the podcast, so he'll appreciate that. Last one. Only because I love people's faces and where it takes them back to. What was your first car?
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's funny. A 1974 Chevy Vega with an aluminum engine. And I bought it. It was orange. And I didn't realize that a lot of the orange was actually rust. That thing was an awful, awful vehicle. But, you know, I was able to cut my teeth and learn how to work a wrench. That's funny. That's a great question. I need to steal that one from my podcast. I love that.
Yeah. And the main reason I asked that one, some of these questions turn into blog entries for my website and whatnot. That one probably won't, but just the memories people get of that and the stories that come with it. And you see people's faces when you ask them that, it brings them back to an awesome time when you first got freedom, and it takes you right back there. You're welcome to steal it though. I can't thank you enough for coming on the podcast. We've had limited face-to-face interaction, but I can't thank you enough for the impact you've had on my life, buddies of mine in Cincinnati's lives, the impact that you'll hopefully have on my family for a long time being in Cincinnati. So I just truly appreciate what you're doing, BT.
Brother, that's too kind of you. I've gotten to know you a bit, just a little bit. I wish I could know you more and we could hang out more, because I know we have a connection, and I'm really thankful for you, and I look forward to sharing a beer with you live and in person instead of on Zoom.
Absolutely. Let's do it. Thanks again. Appreciate everything you're doing.
My pleasure.
Brain MD is Dr. Amon's supplement line, who is a former podcast guest of mine. Dr. Amon is regarded as one of the top, if not the top, brain experts in the entire world, and I've been taking his supplements for a little over a year now and have never felt better. I wish I had these while I was playing. I recommend the Eric Wood Bundle to all current and former contact sport athletes at any level, as well as anyone out there looking to support their brain and increase brain function. The supplements I take daily are Brain and Body Power Max, Neuro-C, Vitamin D3, and Brain Curcumins. For more info on each of these supplements, check out my post on Instagram and I explain them all. My handle is ewood70. Go to brainmd.com and use code ERICWOOD, one word, to get 5% off your order. Thank you for listening to What's Next with Eric Wood. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please rate it 5 stars and subscribe. That goes a long way for us with this podcast. Tune in a couple weeks for another new episode.